This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to a Thursday, May 9th edition of the Sports Ethos NBA DFS Today podcast. I'm your host, Harris, and I am going to be jumping in solo to a two-game slate that is going to be taking over this evening as we have a pair of game twos with the Cavaliers taking on the Celtics and then the Mavericks staying in OKC for their second game against the Thunder. Now, both home teams were able to go ahead and get some relatively convincing victories in their first two games over there. So let's see what that looks like here today. But before we do jump into it, as always, get yourself subscribed to that Sports Ethos DFS Pass if you have not already, with amazing content such as our daily DFS pick'ems, our DFS deliveries, our props, our wagers, and of course, access to our Discord all the way up until lineup lock with the DFS pros. It is the best value in the business, so make sure you are getting yourself on that ASAP. And also, this podcast is sponsored by BetOnline, which is your number one source for all of your summer sports this season. From MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoffs, you get all of the latest stats, news, and scores to be able to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds, lines, team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. So head to the BetOnline website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline is where the game starts. But jumping right into our two games over here. First off, at 7 o'clock Eastern, it is going to be the Cavaliers taking on the Celtics on that game two. You know, it's contrary to what we had hoped. It wasn't nearly as close as we had potentially expected. The spread did happen to be a little bit more telling than it ended up turning out to be. And a 120-95 victory for the Boston Celtics did lead to some pretty, let's just say, down situations as far as some of the Cleveland options are selected. But, you know, we're looking at something similar here today. The Celtics favored to win by 13.5 on a 212 game total. So we'll have to see if that happens to work out in that favor. But looking at the point guard situation as far as this matchup is concerned, I mean, I'm very much still in line with Donovan Mitchell being my favorite point guard pick. Just a combination of the usage, the shot attempts, and really his overall scoring profile at the moment, where he's got now three games, 33-plus points over there. Obviously had that 50 bomb to finish in Orlando as well. But even in that first game, despite the blowout, shot pretty well, 12 of 25 from the field, including 4 of 11 from the three-point line. Ended up with 33 actual points en route to a 50 DFS point night. So again, that profile is not going to change much here. We know when the playoffs come around, Donovan Mitchell's usage takes that bump, and it's come at the expense of Darius Garland, whose usage percentage continues to drop about 4 to 5% from what he had in the regular season, where Mitchell is very much picking up that slack there. So I expect that his price tag is going to continue to rise to get into that 9,000 plus as the Cavs try to keep themselves alive in this series, try to extend it as much as possible. Don't know if they'll be able to take a game away in Boston, but they'll obviously be hoping for, you know, something better than what they were able to put out in that first game over there. And they're obviously still wondering about Jared Allen's availability, and we'll talk about that a little bit later when we get into kind of the big men for them over there. But yeah, as I said, Donovan Mitchell continues to be where I'm going to be spending a lot of my focus as far as the Cleveland side is concerned. While on the Boston side with point guards, Derek White continues to be where I spend my good mid-tier money over there. There's just an incredible consistency that's coming through with him, and he's offering that 6 to 7x upside while he's still in this 6,000 to 7,000 price range. Again, last game, as expected, was able to get 16 shot attempts, including 12 attempts from downtown, which he actually connected on 7, which is really what you're expecting for with the efficient scoring that Derek White has been consistently offering. And with Porzingis out, is going to be relied upon as that kind of second to third option as far as Boston's offense is concerned. So, you know, three straight games, 25 plus points. I don't see anything changing as far as his profile is concerned. You're hoping that he can get a couple more of those ancillary stats to help make this that much more secure, because he was very much just 25 points and five assists. Other than the one rebound, didn't really offer anything outside of that, which isn't usually his profile. He's pretty good as far as stocks are concerned. Often gets himself in a situation where he can get you at least one steal and sometimes even a block to go with that as well. So we'll see if he can get a few more of those stocks there. But regardless, he profiles as an incredibly solid pick, both in cash and GPP, with his solid floor as well as his compelling upside. I don't see why he won't end up in the mid-30s once again as far as the matchup is concerned. And until something changes and his price tag changes, it's going to be something that you want to consistently keep pushing in on. Moving in onto the shooting guard side of things over here. And this is where we do want to look at some of these potential value pieces to kind of support what we've been looked at so far as with those spend-ups as far as Mitchell is concerned, for example. So I mentioned that Darius Garland's usage has taken a downturn over here, and really that's going to come around with them needing a secondary scoring option to be able to do more. And I was disappointed that LeVert only got six shot attempts in these 26 minutes that he played in that first one, and I do expect that if Cleveland is looking to have a little bit more of an offensive punch, especially with Jared Allen likely, you know, given what we're kind of hearing with how his ribs have been reacting and all of that, not necessarily to be available on this game over here. They're going to need, you know, more offense to be able to make up for the fact that their defense is not going to be able to kind of hang on the inside the way that they're usually expecting to. So LeVert needs to get to double-digit shot attempts. And at 4,600 there, I think that price tag is fair to be able to take that shot there. We know what he can do when he gets into his offensive groove, able to get into the 30s pretty comfortably when he gets a couple of those shots falling. And he's able to get to the free throw line, being the pretty adept slasher that he is. So, you know, even on a down night, was able to drop 19 DK points, which obviously is below value, but it's not going to destroy you on a night-to-night basis. So I think he's pretty fair to be able to take in both formats there. And if you are looking to save that little bit of money with a guy who does have some pretty decent upside, I would like LeVert a good bit more than, say, a Max Strus, who can definitely give you some of those big scoring nights if he gets his shot going early. But, you know, he's been a bit up and down as far as his usage is concerned, but also just standing in the corner a lot at this point, not really getting as many opportunities to be able to get his offense going, which is probably why Donovan Mitchell is the one who's attacking the basket a lot and not necessarily looking for him in the corner at the moment. So shot creation is definitely at a premium here, and LeVert is one of the guys on the Cavs who's able to do that. And he should hopefully get that little bit more opportunity to be able to do so. At the same time, I know I haven't spoken too much about Jaylen Brown in general kind of coming into this. I, you know, don't particularly love his overall kind of fantasy output. He did obviously have a great game in that first one. But the issue to me with him is that at 8,000, I'm just a bit worried about his capability of being able to get into that 40s pretty consistently, given that he is going to be kind of scoring heavy on that. Hasn't necessarily been keeping up with a lot of his ancillary stats. His rebounding, which is where you'd hope he can get to that 6-7 on a consistent basis and was able to hit on that last one, is going to have to be that one main supporting stat that gets him going. Because from a assist standpoint, he's definitely been trending outside of the direction of what he'd been doing in the regular season, kind of getting to that four assists per game. But nowadays, we're really just seeing one, two, maybe sometimes three come through. So it's one of those where you're really needing him to have a consistently good scoring night. And for someone who's at 8,000 to be able to do that, I think in cash, it's fair enough to be able to go ahead and get him. It's a pretty safe pick with his floor, because he should be able to get into the mid-20s as far as actual points are concerned. But that upside to be able to get into kind of the high 40s, maybe low 50s on a big night over there is not necessarily what I'm profiling out to. And I'd rather kind of save a little bit of money and go with that Derek White, as I mentioned earlier, where I think they profile out to a pretty similar kind of fantasy upside, while obviously him being 1,300 cheaper just gives you that little bit more flexibility with the rest of your lineup.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
moving into the small forwards over here. So for one, if I'm not necessarily taking a Jaylen Brown or looking at him, I do think that a Jason Tatum at his current 9,400 price tag, which is a pretty decent discount from what we had in the last one, you know, 9,700, and I had even got to 10,000 kind of near the end of the season. I think that's where, again, from a cash perspective, definitely a very solid pick to be able to take. The good thing with Jason Tatum has been his upward trend as far as his rebounding is concerned. Now has four straight double-doubles in that aspect, which is obviously where we want to be able to see that. That being said, his shooting still needs to kind of get back to some of his more regular numbers over there. Has now had four straight games where he hasn't been able to shoot better than 44%. Hasn't really been hitting well from downtown either, only hitting two threes each in four of his last five games, and has shot that at about a 35% clip. So a lot to potentially regress back to the mean over there, but what is a heartening aspect is, as you said, those rebounding numbers, his assist numbers, which are consistently in that 5-6 side of things, and also from a stocks perspective, out of his last four games, he's found himself having one plus block in three of those, got three blocks in his last game over there, which is obviously excellent as a nice little bonus to what he has. And the one thing that's always good with Jason Tatum is that his turnover numbers consistently will be at a pretty low amount, despite having pretty consecutive usage and consistent usage all the way through. So, you know, from a cash perspective, he absolutely is a play. I still think he does have some GPP upside to be able to hit that 50 plus. That being said, at that 9,400 price tag, if we're looking purely at price per performance ratio, I think there are some options in that Dallas OKC game that'll be kind of in there that I might like a little bit more. So it really depends on how your teams are profiling out. And of course, that blowout risk is always there. But regardless, he's getting his usage and getting enough minutes in that time to be able to go ahead and hit his current price tag pretty comfortably, as long as he's not having an absolute stinker of a night. So I do like him for where he stands there. And then finally, if we're kind of looking at, you know, someone to round out the lineup and be that a little bit more of a, I wouldn't say defensive presence as much as safe pick to be able to get it, Isaac Okoro, who got up to 29 minutes in that last game over there. Again, we talk about switchable wings and guys that Cleveland will have to try and throw out to keep Boston at bay as much as possible, especially with the kind of haggard interior presence that they may have at the moment. Okoro is going to be relied on that. Now, he did get up 8 3-point attempts in the last game, which is definitely a good trend to be able to hit, and he hit three of those, which is great. The other aspect that you're hoping he can pick up a little bit more on are some of those ancillary stats, only getting one rebound and assist in that time. But if he can play those 29 minutes as he did in the last game there, he should once again find himself with double-digit shot attempts and hopefully can get some of those long rebounds to come his way as well. Not necessarily the highest upside player, without doubt, but at 3,900, I think there's not too many worse value options that you can go with that should get you enough minutes to be able to hit where he is looking at today. As far as power forwards go, and I'll actually combine the power forwards with center over here, because really where I am looking at with all of this is, first off, with Evan Mobley, who, despite not having a great game in terms of the actual impact on the floor, still ends up with a solid double-double on their shot, 8 of 12, which, 12 shot attempts is probably a little bit more than he usually gets, but you can see that the Cavs are trying to get him a lot more involved as far as the offense is concerned, given the fact that his defensive presence is always known. He's going to consistently be a force on there. But with Jared Allen out and them not having much paint presence otherwise, they're going to try to need him to take a little bit more advantage of the matchup advantages that there are present over there, given the fact that Boston themselves are without Porzingis. Horford, obviously, quite a bit longer in the tooth over there, and is more content to be able to kind of hang out on the perimeter and be more of a help defender on there. So Evan Mobley should have some pretty decent room to operate over there, and he was able to take pretty decent advantage in the first game. So at 7,700, I think as a center, he continues to be one of the guys that I'm going to be focusing on pretty heavily over here, just given that I am able to save some pretty decent money as far as my other perimeter players were concerned so far, and not talking about the Dallas OKC game as of yet. And I'm looking at Kenny over here, who mentioned that Luke Kornet is going to be a guy who probably will find himself in a pretty decent situation to be able to grab a good amount of rebounds. And that's exactly what we saw in that first game. Despite only playing 21 minutes, he was able to get 10 rebounds in that time, and that's pretty much what's anchoring the rest of his fantasy profile, because he's not necessarily known for his ability to get shots going and get his scoring up there. Only ends up with 4 points in that, but as long as he can get those 8 to 9 rebounds, maybe get to double digits again, and can contribute with the odd block or two, at 3,800, you can definitely look worse as far as the center position is concerned. That being said, given he's not deal position eligible or anything like that, unlike Mobley, who does have that power forward eligibility, and as a result allows me to kind of slot in with a bunch of other potential lineups over here, I do think he'll probably be a little less owned on there. So maybe it's worth kind of throwing it out there, because when we're going to look at the Dallas OKC game and then some of the more kind of popular front court options that I'm sure are going to be pretty heavily owned, that's definitely something to think about when you're talking about a 2-game slate and trying to get as much minimal ownership as possible to try and take advantage of that. Moving on to the second game, you said the Dallas Mavericks sticking in OKC to take on the Thunder. Great game for OKC in the first one to be able to go ahead and wrap that up. And they are, once again, favorites in this matchup. A 218.5 game total with this one, with the Thunder favored to win by 5. Now, in that first game over there, OKC, again, was able to keep it pretty comfortable all the way through and then pulled away near the end. So we saw, in the end, a blowout, which not necessarily is what it was looking like throughout, but Dallas was absolutely locked down as far as their offense was concerned, wasn't able to get anything going. And a lot of that is that Luka Doncic still looks like he is much below 100% as far as his health is concerned. He was definitely hobbling out there and wasn't looking great. And it's clear that his knee is going to be something of a bother for him throughout the playoffs. So it's something to obviously think about as far as his percentages are concerned, because his shooting continues to be a big problem as far as Dallas is concerned, counting both the last game of the Clippers series as well as that first OKC game so far. He's basically shooting 33% from the field on about 21 shot attempts, which is obviously not what you want to see, and that's directly affecting his three-point capability as well. He's only hit 2 out of his last 18 over there as well. So the fact that he is getting himself to the free throw line and making some of that up over there does help from that perspective. But if I'm talking about a guy that I'm potentially fading in terms of how things are working out, I think Luka Doncic is one of those potential options over there. And instead, looking at either a Kyrie to come back from his first game, as well as, of course, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I absolutely loved in that game one coming through and came through in a big way, nearly putting up a triple-double on 60 DK points at 29-9-9 night. And despite not having the greatest pure shooting night, was able to get to the free throw line 13 times to help kind of make up the rest of the stat line. So more to love as far as Shai is concerned. Obviously one of the key MVP candidates, and despite Jokic kind of finishing out ahead of him, as expected, congrats to him on that. But Shai has shown that he is not here to play as far as the playoffs are concerned, and continues to be just an absolute force on the inside with his ability to slash the basket. And if he can kind of keep getting these assist numbers the way they are, especially given the fact that Josh Giddey was pretty much played off of the floor early on, and that allowed for him to be a little bit more of a pure point guard for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't know what Josh Giddey's minutes are going to look like kind of going forward, but it wasn't a great matchup for him, and obviously his inability to be that consistent outside threat also hurts. So we may see his minutes continue to be limited as far as this specific series are concerned, with more opportunities for both Shai and Jalen Williams to be kind of running that offense and being able to initiate some more of those plays and get those assist numbers as a result as well. So both of them are definitely in play. I'll talk about Jalen Williams more as a small forward option there, because he does have that kind of interesting dual eligibility that continues to be there, that point guard, small forward eligibility. But in that spend up area, as I said, Shai is definitely in play. Kyrie, who, despite having a decent shooting night, it was the lack of everything else, and really obviously the Dallas Mavericks' inability to get their own offense going, that kept his potential assist numbers down to kind of make up for the rest of the stat line there. So I expect that Kyrie is going to be the one to really have to take on the heavy scoring load throughout the series here. 20 points at what he scored in the first game are not going to be enough. He's going to need to get into that 30-plus range over there, and he's going to have to take more field goal attempts than he did in that first game as well. So with, as I said, Luka continuing to be obviously a threat where the defense is going to hone in on him, but he might be playing a little bit more of a decoy on here with Kyrie and taking on a lot more of that scoring load to be able to keep the Mavericks into it while Luka is basically trying to keep himself as impactful as possible while also keeping his current injury situation in mind as well. So at 8,700, I think Kyrie gives the same kind of upside that we were seeing in that Clipper series over there. If he can have some of those more effective scoring nights and effective field goal attempt nights, as he did in some of those later games in the series, as far as the Clippers are concerned, I expect that we do see that 50-plus upside once again rear its heads. So I expect that at 8,700, when we're talking about a Donovan Mitchell, a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a Kyrie, purely from a potential upside perspective where Kyrie can get going, I do think he has but similar upside as far as Donovan Mitchell is concerned at about the same price over there as well. So I actually do think, given the fact that we're talking about pretty decent value options over there, if you are in a scenario where you're potentially looking to fade a Luka, maybe not have as much exposure to an SGA, that Kyrie and Donovan Mitchell combo could end up being something that works out supremely well, given the fact that there are enough value options to be able to go ahead and make it up. And that we have been talking about a bunch of mid-tier options that have that upside to be able to get to that 6-7x option as well. So something to potentially think about when we're talking about a lineup building over here and whether you want to be a little bit more kind of backcourt heavy in terms of how this is potentially working out. Moving on to the shooting guard side of things over here, I do think there's not much to specifically talk about over here, but we did see Cason Wallace getting 23 minutes in that first game, which is a positive trend for him. Again, directly related to Josh Giddey's minutes on here. So we'll have to see what that ends up kind of meaning as far as the rest of the series is concerned. But Cason being a very solid defensive presence, but also having that little bit more, I want to say, versatility in terms of what he can potentially match up with a bunch of Dallas's kind of larger sized perimeter players, which wasn't necessarily working out great for Josh Giddey. We may see Cason Wallace and even Aaron Wiggins that we saw in the previous game continue to get a couple more extended minutes to up their upside a little bit as far as these kind of value price tags are concerned, and something to potentially think about to help kind of other areas that work out. The other kind of boom or bust option that you may also want to look at is Tim Hardaway at 3,700 over there. He did see 17 minutes in that first game, but wasn't able to get much of his shots going there. Dallas was obviously looking at really anything to get some offense going, especially from the perimeter. And Tim Hardaway was kind of thrown out there to try and get a couple of buckets going and see if perhaps going a little bit smaller can throw a little bit of OKC off. I think that's going to be dependent on how Luka and Kyrie are doing here, whether they're going to be kind of needing him or trying to push him a little bit more over there. And he did come back from his ankle injury in that game as well. So really it was four games off there. But in the end, it's clear that Dallas are going to need a lot more threats from a pure scoring perspective to try and upset the Oklahoma City Thunder over here, especially if they're trying to steal one at home. So for Tim Hardaway, he should get himself another 17 to 20 minute roll there to try and go ahead and put out a couple of quick buckets and get some momentum going. If he can obviously hit that, very scoring reliant, can be a potential GPP option, but he's very much that, just a GPP option only. Moving on to the small forwards, I mentioned Jalen Williams having that dual eligibility as a point guard and small forward, and getting more of those opportunities to be a playmaker with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as their kind of primary ball handlers as far as this current offensive sets are concerned for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think he's more of a cash play than a GPP, but while still having kind of some consistent upside to be able to get into the 40s here. But now that his price tag has gotten into that kind of mid 7,000 range rather than that high 6,000 where I was loving taking him on a consistent basis, he gave you that 40-point upside without too much concern about his floor over there. I think that floor requirement has risen pretty consistently over here for him. And at 7,600, I do think he's slightly more expensive than I'd want to potentially put into, given the fact that we have guys that we're talking about right up there in that low 8,000 range. Jaylen Brown, for example, being just 4,000 more, not necessarily one that I love either way, but now that they're kind of in that same range, I think the story is similar for them as well. They have that consistency that's there. Their floor is pretty secure, definitely good as far as cash plays are concerned, but that GPP upside has definitely been neutralized with that that increase in his pricing. So I'll probably have him in a couple of lineups there, but I won't be looking to kind of overextend my exposure to him, just given some of the more upside-friendly options that we're talking about and are going to talk about as far as the power forward and center position are concerned. But he remains an absolutely solid play to be able to look at here as well. And at the same time, though, I mentioned Aaron Wiggins a little bit ago, where he did end up getting 23 minutes in that first game, including a bunch of field goal attempts in that time, 4 3-point attempts en route to a 16 actual point night and 29 DK points altogether. So his price tag took a little bit of a bump from that 3,500 in the previous game up to 4,000 over here. Again, I would say he's more of a cash play than a GPP one. That upside isn't necessarily going to get him to that high 20s on a consistent basis on here, but he should be getting those minutes there with how the rotation was working out. He ended up being the first second guy coming off the bench over there, and he fit in with a bunch of different lineups as far as OKC was concerned. And obviously they like him in that kind of top of the break side corner area, where he can go ahead and really take advantage of some of that gravity that Shea can go ahead and get two or three defenders kind of closing in on him. So we'll see what we're going to see on here, but you don't necessarily want to rely on that kind of scoring that he would have on a regular basis. He's been kind of more of a solid producer out there, usually getting about a shot for every 3-4 minutes that he's there. So if he can get himself into that consistent 24-minute role or so, that would be obviously great, and we'll see what kind of numbers we're seeing on here. But I do think that from a GPP perspective, you'll want to temper your expectations a little bit for that 4,000 price tag, and instead maybe potentially be looking at someone like a Josh Green at 3,200 on the Dallas side, who did get 25 minutes in the last game, was able to put up 21 DK points. And it's really just coming down to, I mean, he's not going to start or anything like that, but he will continue to play meaningful minutes on here, especially with his ability to kind of hit those outside shots. Hit three of his eight 3-point attempts in that first game over there, while he also just continues to be a pretty sneakily decent rebounder for his size and for the minutes that he ends up playing. So it's going to be an interesting little wrinkle to think about. Again, he was able to get in that Clipper series situations where he got like a rebound every 2-3 minutes on there as well, which isn't necessarily what you would get on a regular basis here, but for the amount of minutes he does play, he does have a pretty decent rebounding rate for his size and his position as well. So something to potentially think about if you can get himself into that double-digit scoring on a more consistent basis, given that he is going to be playing somewhere between 25 to 26 minutes on this Dallas team. I don't see why at 3,200 that's not worth taking a dart throw on, and I'd be happy to jump on him in both GPP as well as cash and see how that that potentially works out. Finally, looking at that power forward and then also the center position over here, I mentioned that PJ Washington should find himself a little bit more involved in the offense. We didn't really see that happen in the first game over there, and I think that's really because as a kind of a feel-out game, trying to see what Luka can do, get him as many shots as possible and see how he's feeling out there. But I do think that in this series over here, with PJ Washington's ability to be able to stretch the floor, get it out there, and really it being just a Chet on the inside that will try to deter him on there, try to push him as much outside the paint as possible, try to have PJ be the one who gets to take advantage of that, while he might end up getting Derek Jones a lot on the other side as well. He should have that advantage to be able to shoot over him as well over here. So we'll see what that looks like. I do think those 7 field goal attempts that he got in the first game is something that we should see going up as far as the series is concerned. Obviously had a little bit of foul trouble in that as well, though I wouldn't be overly
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Concerned about that. But in general, the theme kind of remains that Dallas's point scoring was incredibly neutralized and just not looking like it was kind of able to find easy buckets the way that they were against the Clippers. Obviously, this Thunder team is a much better defensive team than what we were seeing in that first round against the Clippers. But regardless, I just think the where the shot selection was coming from and where they were looking as far as their offensive output was concerned, PJ is going to have to be a lot more involved for them to get there. And I do think his ownership is going to be down because of how he did in the first game and what his usage looked like. So it's something worth taking again. I do think he has that 30-plus point upside pretty consistently, given his kind of fantasy arsenal there and the fact that he can go ahead and rack up rebounds at a pretty decent rate as well. So what I'm really looking for tonight is for him to get his field goal attempts into those low double digits, which would be an ideal scenario for him to be able to hit the upside that I'm potentially pointing out over here, and something to think about for that 5,600 price tag, because I do like him a lot more than a Derrick Jones, even though he's at 4,700 and ended up playing 30 minutes there. You know he's just not going to get those kind of shot attempts, and you're really relying on him having a decent kind of across-the-board, kind of Swiss Army knife kind of night to be able to go ahead and pan out on his price tag. So you need a bunch of blocks from him. You need him to be able to get a handful of rebounds, maybe a couple of assists. And it's almost like a bit of a Draymond Green situation where you need kind of a little bit across the board for it all to kind of work out for him to get his numbers. And given how he kind of profiles out as a kind of defense first only player, really only gets his three-pointers from the corner there. And if he can hit them at a relatively consistent rate, I do think PJ is a much better offensive player, and for that price tag being about 900 more than Derrick Jones, gives you a decent amount of upside to be able to potentially tap into there. Finally, as far as centers are concerned, and I'm going to start off first off with the obvious one, which I know everyone is going to be on, which is Daniel Gafford. I mentioned it in the previous podcast about this first game over there, that Gafford is going to have himself a much bigger role in this series, given the fact that they're not kind of dealing with the bodies of someone like a Zubats on the inside. His more kind of small ball ability to be able to go ahead and flash out onto the perimeter while still being an absolute energy guy on the inside is going to work well in this series, given the fact that it's really just Chet and a bunch of other kind of tweeners that OKC is putting out there. So Gafford should be able to put his imprint on the series, both as a defensive force and to be able to get a lot of those offensive rebounds and putbacks to hopefully up his scoring average a little bit more as well. Absolutely saw that in the first game. He was probably the one guy for the Mavericks that consistently was being a threat out there, ended up with 5 blocks and 11 rebounds alongside 16 points to get up to 42 DK points on here. So he's definitely going to be a pretty chalky pick. That being said, until his price tag kind of rises into that mid 5,000 range, this is absolutely someone that you want to be able to take on a regular basis there. Obviously offering more upside and performance than Derek Lively, who got less minutes and also just didn't look nearly the same force that Daniel Gafford is showing on his side over there. So absolutely someone to take on a consistent basis. For someone who has just that center eligibility, as I mentioned, you can get him to fit in if you are taking, say, an Evan Mobley, who has that power forward eligibility as well. So that does leave you with a scenario where you could potentially take Mobley as your power forward, Gafford as your center, and now you still have your utility slot to be able to fit in a bunch of other potential options. And if you are kind of looking to stick with that center side, it may be worth taking another stab at Chet Holmgren as well, who definitely played well in that first game over there, ended up with 19-7, which is pretty much in line with what he's been doing throughout the playoffs so far. Ended up with about 40 DK points on that one. So again, he's kind of profiling out similar to Mobley in terms of the upside and being able to get into that 40s range while not necessarily blowing you away with the field goal attempts that'll be there. Maybe he can keep at that 16 field goal attempts, which is a nice place to be alongside those 5 three-point attempts, which you did hit 2 of. So he probably profiles to be at about that 5.5-6x range, which is very well worth taking, given how the rest of your lineup potentially works out. But if I'm in a scenario where I could potentially spend up on some of those point guards that we spoke about earlier, to be able to get that Kyrie, that Donovan Mitchell, or even potentially an SGA, depending on how my lineups are working out, I can then potentially get in someone like a Derek White as my mid-tier option while not having spent up nearly as much on my front court over here, and that'll allow my utility slot to be able to be used for one of these more value options there and get that to fit in. So you end up with about four guys that are in that 8,000 range, a couple of mid-tier ones to kind of round that out. And then we had some pretty decent 6x, 7x upside value plays to be able to go ahead and round that lineup up. But that's going to be everything on my side over here. As I mentioned, you know, two-game slate. It's all about the injury report. Definitely keep an eye out on the Jared Allen news to see if he's able to go ahead and find himself on the floor as far as Cleveland is concerned. I actually think that if he does, that actually helps Evan Mobley's upside a little bit, just given the fact that he'll likely have a little less pressure put on him on the offensive side for him to allow him to hopefully get a little bit more of that space to operate on the inside, get some of those hook shots going in, maybe end up putting up more field goal attempts while Jared Allen would purely focus on kind of that defensive end and be able to get some of those rebounds there, because they absolutely need more of that prevention as far as Cleveland is concerned, if they are to try and prevent Boston from taking game two over here as well. But as always, give me your thoughts about what you're looking at as far as these lineups are concerned. Hit me up on Twitter, on Instagram at HAK_Devil, and talk me through just where your spend-ups are going to be. Do you think it'll be another Donovan Mitchell night? Are you looking at potentially spending up on a Luka Doncic and seeing if he's able to get himself kind of back in the groove of things after a pretty lackluster game one? All of that is going to be decided tonight. So, well, let's keep an eye out. I hope everyone's having a good playoff so far, but let's go ahead and take down some of these GPPs.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.